The Paul Ince era, however long that may be, began with a 2-1 win over Birmingham to lift Reading FC clear of the relegation zone before a stark reality check came at Blackpool and a 4-1 defeat. Welcome to the Tyler Sten podcast, episode 291. I'm your host, Mark Mayer, back in the seat this week for episode 291. As I say, the podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans. And it's been a big week in Reading FC history. To discuss that with me is Alan West. Westy, how's it going, mate?
Hiya, mate. Ever close and nearer to that 300 mark, mate. You've done very well.
Yeah, you know what? I'm having to count towards it and work out whether it's going to land kind of after the season or during the season. If we can make our 300th episode a kind of celebration of staying up, then I'll take that.
I think we all will. And let's hope that happens, mate.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's get into the recap then. Before we do, big thanks as always to ZCZ Films, our sponsors and our Patreon subscribers. And well, we've got two very different games to review, so let's get into it now with the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right, then let's do Birmingham first. The good news, Reading got two wins in a row. Paunovic kind of leaving on a high and then Paul Ince starting on a high. 2-1 win, Lucas Shaw scoring in the second half, followed by John Swift penalty. Birmingham did get back into it late on with this kind of weird own goal that Tom McIntyre unfortunately scored, but held on for the win without too much drama towards the end as well. And Westy, I think, whether this is the win that keeps us up or whatever, I just think that we as fans really needed that win back at home on Wednesday night.
Yeah, a rare midweek win as well. It was nice, like I said, to get a win under their belts home in front of their home fans. So I think we suffered long enough. So yeah, it was good. I mean, maybe I'm going to be a little bit controversial here. I remember I was into the radio on the way back home and everyone was quite jubilant and saying how well Reading played. But genuinely, I think they was quite lucky on the night. I think on another day, they'd have probably gone in one or maybe two down in the first half. And then we'd have been battling to try and stay in it. We rode our luck a little bit, especially in that first half. Thought the keeper made some good saves when he had opportunities to, which kept him sort of at 2-0 up at the time when he made a couple of decent saves. And also, again, controversially, I thought probably it was Danny Drinkwater's best game for Reading. I thought he played pretty well on the night. I thought he kept the game flowing. Didn't give the ball away. Thought he'd done everything you could have asked of him. Unfortunately, we don't see that often enough from him. But he showed that he's got quality, if you can unlock it. And on that day, I think he played pretty well. I think a number of them played well. And you can't fault their effort. I thought they'd give it everything they had, which is, again, all we can ask. But once again, we showed that we've got quite a soft underbelly. And as usual, I think we was all looking through our fingers the last sort of 10 minutes or so, as tends to be the way, especially this season. So yeah, good win, good start for Ince. I was quite interested to see the sort of setup. It looked like him and Ray were stood up, sort of barking the orders. And I didn't see Jilks or Ledgerwood leave their seat the whole night. I kept glancing over to see if they'd got off their seat, but they hadn't. They'd obviously been told to sit in the dugout. But if you did notice on the day, Ince kept going to sit next to Jilks and they was having conversations. And then he'd get up and sort of bark orders. So still, I don't think anyone really understands the setup. But it looked to me like Jilks was more of an advisor. And I know from friends of friends who know Jilksy quite well that he's quite happy to play that role as he didn't want to be first team manager. And I can see why. He's had a good career out of Reading. And you know what happens when you go first team manager. If you get 2 or 3 years out of it, you've done pretty well. So you probably want to stay here for the rest of his working life. And as long as he can stay in the back room, I suppose he thought that was his best option. But it was interesting. I say it was good. Good atmosphere again. I thought the crowd got behind him. And it was nice, like I said, to get over the line. I think I say it all the time when I'm on the show, and I've said it since we signed him. I think Reading are a different side when Lucas Jow is fit and firing. He's always given you a goal threat, and his goals have been excellent over his return over the last four or five weeks, and to the point where no one's talking about Andy Carroll anymore.
Yeah, that's a name I've not heard in a little while. I think also we're not talking about Andy Carroll because he's not really done that well at West Brom, has he?
No, he's not. When he went there, he probably thought it was going to be sort of easier for him, a team that weren't so much struggling at the time, although they haven't had any good results recently. You know what Andy Carroll brings, and obviously they're not utilising it quite as much as we were. But yeah, again, I still dread the fact that he might come down here playing for West Brom and relegate us, which would be the irony of the story. A little bit like the Chelsea-Liverpool League Cup final yesterday, when you knew that was written in the stars that he was going to miss that penalty. And I just hope that don't come back to bite us by the football gods later on in the season.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure Reading have much favour with the football gods at the moment. We'll talk about the finances of the club actually in a little bit. But I think for the Birmingham game, I know what you mean about Drinkwater. He was abysmal at Peterborough when I went down to that a couple of weeks ago, and he was just better on the ball. He's off the ball. I mean, off the ball, you know what you're going to get with him, which isn't actually very much. And that was part of the reason that Birmingham could get at us. And I think it was a very even game, and probably 2-0 would have flattered us a little bit. I think you're right. On another night, it could have gone another way. But Reading did attack quite well. They created quite a few chances. Tom Ince, I thought, looked good. One thing I would say, actually, is that Tom Ince and Junior Hoylett tracking back was something that we've not really ever had when Mate and Ajari are on the wings, or not as much. And it's interesting that Yaku Mate has still been largely used on the bench. Obviously, his fitness state, this is effectively still his pre-season, really, isn't it? He didn't exactly have much time to get adapted to the team. So, yeah, it's interesting seeing. I think ultimately that if we have this sort of front line going forward of Hoylett and Ince with Mate, Swift, Zhao in there, that is enough for Reading to, you know, reliably score enough goals that will keep us up. Whether we can keep them out at the other end becomes the big question, doesn't it? Because we had the Blackpool game on Saturday where Reading took the lead, Lucas Shaw, nice goal, everything. And I don't know whether it's a case of Reading scoring too early, that kind of cliche, or whether it's just the sense that going 1-0 up for Reading doesn't really mean very much these days, does it? Because you know there's always a chance that that we're not going to keep a clean sheet. And ultimately, I think the sort of killer for me wasn't so much that Blackpool kind of added on goals late on, it's that we didn't keep this lead for very long. They got back into the game, I think in the 27th minute they equalised. And from there, I mean, you know, being away from home and the team not being quite sure under a new manager, it just kind of fell apart, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Again, just going back in time a little bit, I mean, I've been on the show all season saying the same thing, that you've got to, if you're playing Championship football, you need to get players in that box as quickly as you possibly can. And I think noticeably, you've seen it, especially against Birmingham the other Wednesday night, that they did have four or five players in the box all of a sudden. And it's not made us any better defensively, but at the moment, we're looking like we have to outscore teams to win games. Much like the Preston game a few weeks ago. We can score two or three games, but three goals, so it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to win the match. So it's obvious where the problems are. Ince has said himself that he recognises where the issues are. We all recognise where the issues are. It's quite clearly in your face. You can see it. But what they're going to do to rectify that, I don't know, because they certainly didn't against Blackpool, what you just moved on to, because, again, we scored early. Lucas Zhao, there, man of the moment. If you're giving the ball in a box, he's only even given the box, to be fair, so he can make goals for himself. But he's putting the ball away. But if we're going to carry on having to outscore teams, we're going to lose a lot of games. I thought, again, maybe some of the changes you might not have done on another day, because you didn't have Laurent and Rinomota in midfield. It does make that central area quite weak when it comes to defending. And again, I think our two centre-backs, or whoever's playing centre-back at the moment, is more than dubious. And again, this might be a bit controversial, but I think Morrison has finished as a Championship footballer. I think he's going down the same route as McShane went down when he's a yard too slow. Not to blame him for all the goals, don't get me wrong, but he's certainly, the two centre-backs, Holmes and Morrison together, I think is a disastrous combination. I think they're both lacking pace. Holmes tends to be a bit gung-ho, and I think Morrison's a yard too slow nowadays. So that's going to cost us. And if you haven't got some steel in midfield, which we certainly didn't have on Saturday, you're always going to let teams get at you. I mean, I was on Radio Berkshire this week, and I was just basically saying that over the last three games, we're sort of averaging 17 shots at our goal. And 17 of those shots that we had at our goal went in. 17 shots were on target, sorry, and seven went in. Luke Stouff will come in on Saturday, and I think we was all thinking, oh, good, Luke, sort of, did he get taken out a bit too early? I think Hines come in and played well, so no one's really saying that anymore, but Luke Southwood certainly didn't do himself any favours with his first two goals against Blackpool, because I thought that was, both of them goals were dreadful goalkeeping.
Well, the thing is with Southwood, I mean, Hine, they're saying, could be out for the season now with injury, so we might well have seen the end of Carl Hine, and you know, we can kind of makes any review of his abilities kind of mute, I guess. But with Southwood, he ends up in positions that you don't see other goalkeepers end up in, do you? He does but that first goal, I think it was kind of a bouncing ball in the box and the player heads it. And he's just kind of 3 yards off his line, not connecting with the ball. So he's either made the wrong decision to come, which probably is the right decision to come, or he's made it too late, in which case he's a yard behind and it's just an easy header. So that's my worry with Southwood, is that he just ends up, because he's obviously very agile, isn't he? He's very kind of flexible and quick off he's quite quick with his feet. So that's obviously been his game growing up as a youth player and everything. That's been his advantage, because he's not a big goalkeeper, is he? He's not going to be one who's, you know, a Marcus Hanneman who's just kind of bulldozed through and catch the corners and stuff. So he uses that, but I'm not sure he uses it necessarily in ways that at this level are smart enough.
I mean, yeah, a couple of things about that first goal. I mean, firstly, you had three players bearing down on him. We've all stepped out. It's been an easy header over the top, and they're sort of unopposed header at goal. I mean, anything drops in the six-yard box should be the goalkeeper's. You see the ball in the air. Everyone's missed it. Again, I think he's maybe give it maybe a second too late to react to it, and the guy's got there before him and has had an easy header into the net. But even the second goal, I mean, there's another corner we've conceded from. I thought, to be fair, that the striker or the player, the Blackpool player, was all over Morrison. He sort of put his hands on his shoulders and Morrison couldn't even get off the ground. So on another day, you might have got a free kick forward. But even so, that's 3 yards from your line. The goalkeeper should come and wipe everyone out in that position. But he's learning. I mean, it's hard to be harsh on him, because he's sort of been chucked into the fire and told to get over it. And he's still learning his trade as a young goalkeeper. He's made some great saves, but it's just, I think we've seen quite a few sort of what I'd call rookie errors over the last three or four appearances of his. And again, for a young goalkeeper, it's not good for their confidence to make an odd mistake and then make another odd mistake, then get dropped, then get stuck in and make some mistakes. You know, his confidence must be on the floor, and you don't want a goalkeeper in a relegation battle that's lacking confidence.
Yeah, I suppose if I wanted to be, maybe this is a bit kind, but he does kind of remind me of early Adam Federici, in the sense that his distribution tends to be all right, makes the errors, but his shot-stopping ability, and if a player, not necessarily from headers and stuff, but a player shoots with his foot from 20 yards out and it's going in the corner, he's got as good a chance as anyone of saving it. And that's his kind of, that's his strong point, as it were. And I suppose moving forward then, looking for, you know, where we go from this Blackpool defeat, I did see quite a measured reaction on social media after this game, because there's people saying, like, just because we beat Birmingham didn't mean we were going to stay up. Just because we lost to Blackpool doesn't mean we're going to go down. And what Paul Ince said before both games was that he needed time on the training pitch to work through the defence. You can't just present a PowerPoint presentation to defenders and suddenly they start keeping clean sheets. You need the hard work. You think of managers like Tony Pulis and Warnock, who have always had good defences. That's because they put the hours in on the training ground, organisation and all that sort of stuff. Now, that couldn't happen, obviously, before Birmingham and Blackpool because of the midweek games and the travelling, etc. But we've now got the week ahead before the Millwall game on Saturday. And I think after that, we've got another week ahead. That is ultimately as much time as any manager can ask for to start organising these defences and get things going on the training pitch. So now I suppose the question is on Paul Ince and what he can do to rectify these problems.
Yeah, definitely. And again, if you look at Saturday's side, we're getting into a position now where most of the squad are fit. Ajara came back this week. The bench looks strong. It's a Maite's getting back to full fitness. So the excuses are running out from not getting good results, because all of a sudden we've got players on the bench that could influence games, whereas probably earlier in the season, we didn't have that. We had a young bench of inexperienced players, which isn't happening at the moment. So if you can get them defending better, you know you've got goals in the side. I think Reading have got every opportunity to get out of it. So I don't think Inter have to be spectacular.
Yeah, well, let's go into the mailbag. We'll hear from Paul Ince first, of course, and what he said after the Blackpool game. Then we'll go into the mailbag, and we've got a couple of questions on what's going on with that.
It was only the last 5 minutes when we're pushing, you know, to try and get back in the game. They scored our two goals. You know, if you take away the two goals in the last 5 minutes, you know, it was a pleasing performance. I thought we were better in the second half than we were in the first. So, as I said to the players, listen, there's going to be lots of bumps in the road. You know, in an ideal world, it'd be great if we can win the next 12 games, but it's not. You know, we're in a relegation fight, you know, and we know that, you know, and, yeah, I'm disappointed because we could have kind of prevented some of those goals. We get a great start with Lucas scoring, and then we just give a silly goal away. It's not the time where they kind of cut us out open. Two corner kicks, two long balls, and you know we have to do better with that. We have to deal with that. We never dealt with Nadine for the whole game. You know, we got dropped deep. We got, you know, bullied to a certain degree. But there was some positive stuff. Second half, we played some football. When we play well, we cut them open. But unfortunately, the Championship, it's not just about playing well and being defensively good. It's about being defensively good. And that's what I think we weren't today. Defensively, we were poor.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow The Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
Just the one question in the mailbag actually this week, pretty thin on the ground because I'm sure everyone's just kind of in that waiting stage to see what kind of unfolds over on Saturday. We've all had the protests and everything go on, and obviously the worry over the club continues, but the worry over the manager's state is kind of, you know, we're in kind of limbo at the moment, waiting to see what happens with that. Now, Benjamin Vickers has tweeted us, though, saying, I can understand why Rinomata was right back. Blackpool had pace on the wings. Drinkwater and Tom Dellibashiri weren't/aren't combative enough, though. With hindsight, though, who could we have found a fullback from elsewhere in the team, kept Rinomata in the middle? I've just had a little flick through the bench, actually, on Saturday. And it is difficult, but I think it's Rinomata has played right back before, and maybe the question could have been more about what we do instead of, if we're moving Rinomata to right back, what we do with Drinkwater and Dellibashiri. Maybe they weren't the best combination to have there. Maybe it would have made more sense to have someone like Swift in for Dellibashiri. Halilovic obviously hasn't really like come back yet, but he was on the bench. Ijari and Mate as well could have maybe played an attack with Swift further back. I mean, Dellibashiri, he's an interesting player, isn't he, Westy? Because it's a bit of a cliche, but yeah, he's got all the physical components. He's quick. He can run with the ball. He can bring the ball out and, you know, transition phases and all that sort of stuff. His technique doesn't appear bad, but it's not great. And then I suppose after that, it's just about him making the right decisions, being in the right places at the right time. And that's probably where he kind of falls down a little bit.
Yeah, I kind of don't know what sort of player he is. And we've seen him over three quarters of a season now. He's not a player that sort of gets forward and scores goals particularly. He's not a great tackler. He's not a great ball player. He's not a particularly tricky sort of a Jaria type player. He's sort of average at everything, if that makes sense. He's sort of all right at all the components, but he has nothing that suggests to you that he's a master of any of them. I think really, if anything, his form sort of dropped off since the start of the season when he looked quite good earlier in the season. But at the moment, he's sort of been put on the bench quite a lot. He's coming on for the last 20 minutes, not really making much of an impact. And I don't see what he's good at. I can see why Watford loaned him out, let's put it that way, because he's not anywhere near a Premier League footballer. So you can see what they were thinking. Say, yeah, he has got the attributes, but he's mastered none of them. He doesn't fit in anywhere, really, does he? You can play him on the wing. You could play him in the middle. You could stick him up front, and I think you still have the same performance from him. We leave the end of the game after 90 minutes and think, what did he actually do during the 90 minutes? He just does a lot of nothing, and he's a 6 out of 10 player every week. You know, does that make sense to you, Mark?
Yeah, he's not offensive by any means, and he's not a bad footballer. He's definitely, you know, in most Championship teams, he'll play like 30 games a season and be there and have his good moments. He scored that cracking long-range strike early in the season against Peterborough, didn't he? Like, he'll do all those things, but it's just about how often he does them, and it doesn't appear to be very often. It doesn't.
No. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So basically, you know what the others do, and you know what Rinomoto is all about. You know what Drinkwater's about to a certain extent. You know what Swift brings to the team. I just don't know what Dellibashiri brings to the side. I think he sort of does a lot of nothing.
That's the thing. And as Benjamin says about playing Rinomata at right back, I think he probably, I mean, unless you're going to put someone like Hoylett there, which I think in hindsight maybe would have worked. But I mean, there's probably people who listen to this and think the idea of Hoylett at right back is just an insult to football. So It's difficult.
I think it might be one of them, to be honest with you, Mark. I think it might have been an insult to football, but I get your point. But I genuinely think it would have made a great deal of difference wherever he'd have played. I know all sitting here in hindsight say, wow, you should have played Winham out of central midfield. But given the decision at the start of the game to play someone with experience at right back, I think I might well have done the same thing. If Winham out, I wouldn't have played right back and played a central position, would we have won the game? Probably not.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Well, let's go on to news bites then, because we've got a little bit to talk about in that this week, actually, rounding up the rest of the teams in the club, and also the financial numbers have come out. So everyone get your pen and papers ready, because the maths test is about to begin.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
So let's have a quick rundown of the other teams then. The women, unfortunately, out of the FA Cup. An extra time defeat to West Ham on Sunday. 105th minute, 1-0 defeat that was, but unfortunate, really. So a bit of a tough week, having lost 4-1 to Brighton in the WSL. They've got Arsenal on Wednesday, 7:15 away from home. That's going to be a difficult game, but hopefully they can pull out a good performance for that. Under-23s, Noel Hunt is in charge now of the under-23s, former Reading striker, championship winner, of course. Unfortunately, they started with a 7-0 defeat to Forest in the week. They play Wolves later today, actually. That's Monday evening. They're playing Wolves, so check out on the Tyler Sten. Reading FC Academy Twitter will probably be covering that as well. The under-18s suffered a 4-2 defeat to Arsenal, but they are ninth in the table in the Premier League South. That's of a 14-team league, I think ninth for a Reading team is not too bad, to be fair. They've got West Ham up next. And then we've had the other main news that came out in the last couple of days are the financial figures for 2020-2021. That is last season. So these don't include things like, you know, Michael Olise leaving, Liam Moore being moved on in January, Puskas, etc. This is about all of last season. And really, they don't give great reading, as I'm sure no one was imagining that everything would have been fixed, particularly because this is the COVID time. So, Westy, I'll give you a quick rundown of what's gone on. Basically, kind of gives us a stark sense of what Reading are up against, because commercial income, attendances, match day income, they're just all kind of lower mid-table for the Championship. And the ex-Premier League teams on the parachute payments absolutely dwarf us in a lot of these senses. So Reading already on the kind of back foot with just generally speaking, how much money they can make. Obviously, not all the teams have released their COVID year figures. A lot of teams are not quite as on it as Reading at the moment, to our credit, to be fair. So comparisons are a little bit tough. But Reading's loss for the year is down, but it's still £36 million. Income is down, but obviously COVID kind of affects that. Roughly about £6 million, analysts have reckoned we've lost in terms of our income. And at this point, it's worth me giving a big shout out to the Swiss Ramble Twitter page, who analyses all kinds of football figures and all this sort of stuff, has given a big old rundown, lots of numbers and details, which is on Twitter. We've retweeted it off the Tyler Sten page, so go and give that a check out. It's really useful to be doing that for us. It's effectively just wages and historical transfer dealings are the killer. Aluko, Puskas, etc. 234% of Reading's turnover is being spent on wages. That's really bad, obviously, but teams like Bristol City on 212%, QPR 166, Coventry 111, just for comparison. So Reading's still not on top of that, but we can assume that it would have got a bit better given the transfer embargo and everything for this season that we're in now, and some player sales, like Elise say, will have helped for this season. Wages down 14%. However, we'll actually get onto the director in a minute, but there's been an extra £43 million of interest-free loans from Dayong, who's now apparently about £134 million he's invested in the club. £90 million of that is loans. But as I say, they are interest-free. And really, with loans from an owner, they're the sort of thing that will get called in when he comes to sell the club, if possible. Highly unlikely he'll demand that back tomorrow. So Reading are in a total gross debt of £101 million. That's the fifth highest in the Championship. And amongst all that, we've decided to increase the director's pay. 28% it went up this year, or last season, should I say, £583,000 to £745,000. I can't really think of there being any good reason for that. It just kind of shows, Westy, that we are in a very difficult position. We can't underestimate how hard it is to make money as a Championship club, because frankly, none of them make money. And it's just generally, we are fighting kind of the tide of history, although these are recent mistakes that Reading have made in terms of transfers, wages and everything. But our ability to get out of that and our ability to kind of move forward and produce a good football club amid this fight that we're having to make is incredibly, it just doesn't feel like we're up to the task, really. And things like director pay going up is just stupid. So I just feel like Reading up against it and our ability to kind of put out the flames is very much under question.
Definitely, because like I say, because everyone's out of contract this season, we haven't even got any sellable assets, have we? It's not as if we can say, oh, actually, we've got an Elise Ace up there. We can sell him for 15, 20 million, get ourselves out of trouble straight away, pretty much, or one big hit. There isn't anyone really that's going to fetch that sort of money. And let's face it, the only two players that you would say were sellable assets is Joe and Mate. And the last thing you want to do is get rid of either of them two, because they're going to score your goals. So they are in, well, a terrible position, really. It didn't look any better this year. It did last, not really. Still losing a lot of money. But like you say, I suppose the one positive thing you can say is, one, that was a COVID year, and two, after the sales and the fact that they have dropped quite a bit from the wage bill over the course of this season, the hope is that the losses won't be so massive next year, but they will still be losses. You can't see them even breaking even over the next four or five seasons, can you? Which would bring its own problems. Obviously, a wage bill is going to get cut considerably, which, as we all know, means your quality of players is going to get cut quite considerably. So if that happens and you drop into League One, you give yourself another problem. It is a real tough balancing act for them. And I don't see at the moment how they're going to get out of that cleanly and easily. So that's the concern. And as you know, if you stop winning games, people stop coming. So you start losing revenue through the gate as well. So they've kept, to be fair to Reading, they've kept the prices of going to watch Reading a very reasonable for quite a long time. And again, that's a balance now, because you put that up, then people stop going. You're not winning, people stop going. So it's tough. And I don't see, without any sellable assets, how they're going to get out of that without there being some sort of knock-on effect.
No, I mean, for this summer, with all the players like Swift and everyone leaving for free, we're obviously going to have to sign new players. That will mean signing on fees and stuff like that, or transfer fees if such a luxury can be bestowed upon us. And yeah, it is just so difficult. And I think ultimately, club, you know, it is possible to do it in the Championship, because as I say, all the clubs are losing about £30 million a year. They're all struggling for COVID. The one thing that Reading really did struggle with in this financial year, and certainly didn't make as much as they should have in the one that is happening now, is those player sales. You look at the chart for player sales in the Championship, Reading are way down the bottom. Clubs, obviously, I mean, Norwich and Brentford, obviously, Norwich are a bit of a different example, but they were making like £60 million off player sales and stuff like that. Reading should be making more than what they did, but it's a vicious cycle, as you say, that as the more money you lose, the harder it is to make a team, and as the crapper team you have, the less money you make. I worry that Reading haven't learned their lesson fully yet in terms of how to actually make a good football club that can run itself as much as possible and everything. And in reality, the only thing that can happen this summer when all these players leave is that the owner will have to put in more of his own money, and that money will have to be invested in building a team, because we've built a club now in terms of infrastructure as much as we can probably have for now. So it's just going to have to go on building a team at short notice that's going to have to be put under a new manager, hopefully in the Championship. And ultimately, that team is going to have to fight for promotion, because if we don't fight for promotion, nothing will change in terms of the finances for the foreseeable future.
No, and again, this year, I mean, if you think about this year, a lot of the players that we've got in and around that squad now or in this team are players that weren't ours at the start of the season. I mean, we've got them in on freeze. We've got players on loan. But like I say, it's possible to get 11 players together of enough quality to get yourself in a position in the Championship to at least be in the playoffs. I think the days are starting to disappear where teams from the Premier League don't do so well. I know West Brom are struggling this year, but normally two of them are either, one goes up automatically and one finishes third or fourth. If they don't finish first and second. And I think because there's becoming such a big gap in finance between the haves and the have-nots, you can have this championship for a long, long time now. But you can do it. I mean, you can get into them playoffs and you can get promoted. And I think everyone thinks the same. I mean, Huddersfield were in and around it again this year, whereas last year kind of struggled. Do you know what I mean? So it's possible. I think we missed the trick a long, long time before any of this, really. I think you pointed at the teams dropping out of the Premier League, your Fulhams and your Bournemouths and teams like that. Bournemouth had a lot of assets to sell when they dropped into the Championship, and they sold them and made a lot of money from them. And that's gave them the ability to put a squad together that's capable of getting promoted again. And for the last two or three seasons, they've been there or thereabouts. And you think that at some point that they'll crack it, get back in the Premier League, and probably sort of secure the club's future for the next 5 years or so. Even if they get ready, Norwich do it all the time, don't they? Norwich go up, they struggle, they come back down, the club's in a great financial state. I think we missed a trick a long time back when we had that opportunity. I think people moan now about the parachute payments, but let's not forget we had them. So we can hardly complain about other teams doing what they do when we had the opportunity to do exactly the same thing, but in many ways kind of blew it. So it is what it is. You just hope that they can get enough quality together to just work. We've got enough quality now, I think, to stay in the division. Whether they will or not, we'll see. But certainly next year, I mean, it's such a... You can't predict what's going to happen, can you? I don't think anyone sat on any podcast can say, do you know what, next year I think we'll be all right. Because at the moment, you'd say, we won't. But looking at the players we've got available to us at the moment on a low budget, you think, well, they should be doing better than what they are. So it's possible. Only time will tell. Hopefully it'll go in the right direction. But the fear is for me, you, and everyone else probably listening to this, that that won't happen. The big Reading fan.
That's the precarious position of being a Reading fan these days. And yeah, I mean, Sheffield United have had a crap season, but they've obviously just come down. They're still seventh. Luton are sixth. I mean, no disrespect to Luton. I know a couple of Luton fans and they're having a great time of it. All credit to them. But they're sixth at the moment. If Luton can get sixth, I looked at what they were doing in the summer. They just signed some good championship free agents early, built a team, good manager. There you go. Sixth in the league. Whether they hold it or not doesn't really matter because they've had a good season. Blackburn fourth. Huddersfield to their parachute payments, but they've got a good manager third. Team that half the players, even I've not heard of. And I follow football quite a bit, as you'd imagine. So it is possible. Reading just have to get those basics right, get themselves in position, make some good decisions. And that's kind of what we've lacked. But yeah, I think, yeah, any questions on this sort of stuff, do get into the touch with the podcast on the Gmail, obviously the Twitter and everything like that, because it's a topic that we could probably do a whole podcast on. But ultimately, I think most fans know the situation and we'll just have to wait and see. The most important thing, however, for now, staying in the Championship, let's go into Big Match Preview and talk about the next game up for Paul Lynch's team.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So Millwall at home on Saturday. This is into March now, Saturday, March the 5th, 3 p.m. kickoff at Select Car Leasing Stadium. Interestingly, Cardiff played Derby actually on Tuesday before this game. So we'll have a bit of a clearer picture. But Reading, as it stands, 6 points clear of Barnsley, who have won a couple of games, 3 in the last 4, above the drop zone. They've actually got a game in hand as well, Barnsley. Derby and Peterborough 2 games back. Peterborough have a game in hand, but they haven't won for ages. Cardiff are 7 points clear of Reading, with Hull and Birmingham, Swansea just above them. So dragging back one of those teams is, I think, pretty vital for Reading. Millwall 11th. They've won 4 in a row, which is really inconvenient. So how Reading are going to approach this game? I think really what I said earlier, Westy, for me, it's just that time on the training pitch that Paul Ince is going to have, making sure that this team can be well-drilled, get hopefully a couple of players back, at least, you know, someone who can play maybe centre-back or right-back or something like that, bring Rinomota back into the middle of the park. And then it's just about Reading getting the basics right. And they probably don't even need to train any kind of attacking moves at the moment because you've got Lucas Shaw separate up front. Just give them the ball and tell them to play their natural game. Spend all the time focusing on the defence and then we'll have a good chance of beating Millwall.
Yeah, we have a good chance. A good chance of having any. Probably have to outscore them. Probably end up 3-2 or 4-3 or something like along those lines. But like you said, just get them organised. And I think we see, like I said, we could see the difference, the slight differences and the slight changes that they made. It's just central defenders always worry me. It's just, can we get a lead and hold it And there's every chance we can. Like I said, always come off a back of defeats with optimism after about Tuesday comes. You know, Monday, Tuesday, I feel like, wow, we could beat Millwall. Will we? We'll see. But as always, and as again, cliched, Millwall are always difficult to play against. They're always sort of in the middle of the Championship, pushing to that top half. And they got a nasty habit of getting good results when you least expect them to. So it'd be a tough game for Reading, but hopefully we can get some out of it. Even if it's a point, I know it's not ideal, but we just need to keep picking up points here and there. Because like I said, we have got a head start on the others. I think Peterborough relegated. They look atrocious. They can't even score any goals. Derby, I was quite surprised, lost this weekend. I thought they was nailed on to win that game and catch us up. And like I say, Barnsley have come out the pack a little bit when we thought they were probably down. They've managed to string a couple of results together, but that's how easy it is. I mean, we strung a couple of results together and looked like we was well clear. We lose one game and everyone seems to be dragging us back again. So the hope is that they go into Saturday's game and they get some out of it. And there's no reason to suggest that they can't, whether they will or not, we shall see.
Yeah, another season of having Barnsley chase us down. It didn't go too well last season, funnily enough, or the opposite end of the table. I don't know who would have predicted that a couple of years ago. But for predictions then, quick update on the prediction league. Fair play to Ben, was the only one who got a correct result over the last couple of games. He got 2-1 against Birmingham. Myself, Sim, Ollie and Handbags all picked up a point for that. None of us thought we'd lose at Blackpool, such as our sense of dour optimism. So it kind of leaves Westy on 24 points. We've got Ollie on 22, Adams on 21, Handbags 17 with myself, Sim on 16, and Ben is on 14 points. So what are you going to say for this one then, Westy?
Do you know what, man? Just before I say that, it makes me laugh. After the back of a win, then all of us seem to think, oh, that's it. We've turned the corner. There's no way we're going to lose this game away to Blackpool. But if anyone was there at home to Blackpool when they tore us apart from large parts of the game, you've already thought to yourself, if you're a gambling man, and I am, you think, well, there's no chance Reading are going to go there and beat them. You know, at the end of that game, you thought, there's no chance that Reading are going to go to Blackpool and beat them at the back end of February. But stupidly, we all assumed that they was going to go out there and tear them apart out of nowhere. So it just always makes me laugh to think that we'll do exactly the same thing. And I always kick myself afterwards and think, why did you do that for Alan? Surely you were clever enough to realise. You see him play a few months back, they were far better than Reading, and now you've gone for a away win or a away draw.
Heart overhead, that is, isn't it?
Hilarious, actually. But yeah, so based on that, I'm going to go for a 1-0 again.
Yeah, well, I very nearly went 1-0, but I'm going to say 2-1 because I think there's actually, if a theme is going to emerge for Reading staying up this year, it might just be the home games being the things that save us, because we do make a good atmosphere these days, get a lot of stick on from people who haven't been to Reading for a few years. But, you know, Club 1871 and everything, I think we do get behind the team, and that will help us get a good performance and a good result against Millwall on the weekend. So thank you very much, Westy, for popping on this week. It's been plenty to talk about, as always, supporting Reading, isn't there?
It's never uneventful. And just on that point, I did on Twitter this week, I did say that one of the best things to come out of this season has been the 1871 area. And I know it gets a lot of stick here and there, but I've got to say, for the match day atmosphere, it is much better with them than it was without them. I remember years ago when I first started the podcast, probably about 10 years ago now, I had a guy contact me about having the Biscuit Boys, and they'd done one experiment with it, and it sort of drifted away quite quickly. But it definitely has helped the atmosphere at Medeiros Stadium. Let's face it, we barely feel it most of the time, if get anywhere near it. We're lucky if we feel half of it. So to have them singing all the game, like I say, even during this season where it's been really poor, the crowd have never turned on the players until at least the end of the game. So you can't knock what the fans have done this year. You could just knock what the hierarchy have done for a number of years.
Yeah, I'd echo that. So that draws to a close this episode of the podcast. Hopefully we'll be back in about a week's time, probably on the Monday or something of next week, to talk about a good win against Millwall. Reading, 6 points clear of the relegation zone. That just shows how important it is to get some wins on the board and ease the kind of worries. But as we've seen from the financial figures this year, there's plenty to concern ourselves about on the pitch and off it at the moment. But, you know, it is funny how all those sort of concerns can drift away after a win. So hopefully we get that on Saturday against Millwall. Thank you, as always, for tuning in and listening. We'll be back in about a week's time. Until then, come on, you arts.
fire.